Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. He says he wouldn't be surprised to see some sharp market moves from now through November. He believes the gold and silver charts are overextended and crude could drop to the low 50s. InsideTrackTrading.com President Eric Haddock looks at where we are in the cycles concerning gold, silver, palladium, platinum, bonds, interest rates, the stock markets, crude, and Bitcoin. He also checks in on the 80-year war cycle. Publisher of the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter, Robert Campbell, talks to us from San Diego to chat about gold, the latest on the U.S. and California real estate markets, and his secret for getting more than asking when you sell your home. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at ChartSpy. Ross, welcome back to This Week in Money.
It's nice to be back, Jim.
The stock markets this week, we had a big correction earlier on, and I noticed on Friday the Canadian stock markets weren't doing all that well.
No.
What's the story in the U.S.?
It's October, and October is known for volatility, isn't it? So, you know, we peaked on these markets, depending upon the index you look at, somewhere back in September, right around the 25th or so. Canadian market, though, managed to put on a new high this week, took it on the nose on Thursday and Friday. We're starting to see, though, some interesting facts here. The high yield market, when you take a look at the HYG or the JNK ETFs, which look at high yield, they've topped, took the break last week and have bounced to a lower high. So the uptrend that we were seeing, which was supportive to the equity markets since April, has clearly lost its momentum. And if it were to take out the lows that we saw last week, then I would definitely be looking for some downside on the equity markets. And when we look at the high yield spread, that is available from the Federal Reserve, that one bottomed out here in the last couple of weeks and has had a pretty good bounce. It's gotten itself into a new resistance level as of this week. And we look at any move through a support or resistance when you had an existing trend. Any move through that creates a breakout, and in this case, it would be above the highs that we saw this week, then you can be looking for a significant correction in the equity market. You typically see one of these signals every 18 to 24 months. The last one that we had was a sell signal back in February, and then that spread became overextended in April, which also then was a signal for a bottom in the equity markets. But, you know, what we've had here is the credit markets have been looking good since April. They're tired right now. And if they start to make any significant moves, definitely going to see some downside for stocks. The other thing we look at is the global money supply. And that one is we look at it on a forward basis. 88 days is the optimum to look at. It's a lead time for equities. And there's a spike low showing up in the first week of December. Doesn't necessarily mean we have to drop into that level, but that's the point from which we might expect upside action to start again. So it's not keying in as a sell signal, but it is showing that we're the better part still of a month and a half before we would have a spike low in the index and be looking for some upside in stocks. So be pretty darn wary out there right now.
What's going on with gold?
Gold and silver. In the last week or so, we've watching the daily charts. They became as overextended on our models as we've seen only half a dozen times since 1972. And as of the middle of this week, we sent out an email saying that we were within days of an interim high as far as gold was concerned, and any lack of momentum being a first day with a lower low would trigger some pretty good selling. So the optimum move now for gold would be a 10% per correction from here, taking us down to about 3850. Silver is far more volatile than gold, and that one is looking like it could be down into the mid-40s, maybe $45 to $46. That would be a pretty hard break from 52, which we've just seen in the last couple of days. So I think it's time for a bit of a clean out before the next leg to the upside. And these can be pretty sharp. So take a look at the mining stocks, the GDX, the GDXJ. Spiked up to new highs on Thursday. They're giving it back on Friday. And I wouldn't be looking for too much more on the upside. There clearly has been a, if we look at it in terms of the weekly move, I think we're 10 or 11 weeks of consistently higher highs and higher lows. That ranks these moves up into the stratosphere of what we see historically. So the correction is due from that perspective as well.
What's going on with crude?
Crude is on track here for a low. It's breaking down. We've got the lowest lows in both crude oil and in gasoline that we've seen since back in 2021 for the gasoline, and back to the May lows right now on crude oil. The seasonality is negative, and we're watching the weekly chart. Prices are at 57, and I wouldn't be surprised at all that we're into the very low 50s before this seasonal decline is behind us. We've got some measurements that we'll be looking for as it approaches the bottom, which, there are some characteristics which are quite common around the seasonal lows for crude oil. So, yeah, we'll be on the lookout, but it's we're talking about weeks away, not days away.
What's going on with the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
U.S. dollar has, we talked about it last week, a double bottom between July and September, had a decent bounce off the bottom, and gave up some ground here this week. And it's, it's given back maybe a third of the gain that it had off the September low. This would be a normal spot for support, and the upside. We're sitting right now at 98 and change, and I think, clearly we're looking for something at 100 or higher as a realistic target on the upside. On the Canadian dollar, it's weak as we would expect with the energy prices, and also if we look at the CRB index, which Commodity Research Bureau index, that one has continued sliding now. Canadian dollar had bearish divergences on the most recent rallies here a month ago, and there's nothing bullish happening at this point, so it should be easy sailing on the downside with bounces along the way. But overall, don't be looking for any decent action. Maybe, we're sitting at 71 and a quarter. Maybe it bounces back to 71 and three quarters, but I think that's a pretty good resistance above us right now.
Ross, thank you so much for the update.
Good to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. Find him on X at Charts by Ross. Coming up, Eric Haddock, next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Eric Haddock, CEO and president of InsideTrackTrading.com. He's speaking to us from Central California. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Well, thanks for having me back, Jim.
How are things at InsideTrack, spelt with two I's, and how can our listeners subscribe?
Well, things are going pretty well. I'd have to say that this big bull market, this surge in gold and silver and platinum, has really caught a lot of people's attention, since it was something we've been talking about all year and pinpointing this exact time frame. But any of your listeners can check out a wealth of past publications that have helped pinpoint this move, and our other subscription options and the publications we offer at our main website of InsideTrackTrading.com. And that is INSIIDE, TrackTrading.com.
Gold is over $4,000 an ounce and continues to hit new all-time highs. Are your cycles showing when to expect the final top for gold?
Actually, they are, and it's something you and I talked about over a year ago, and even back in October and November of 2024, in a couple of the interviews we did then, I was explaining why gold had this uncanny cycle that at the time was projecting a 3 to 6 month peak in October of 2024, and that would then project future cycle highs for late October, early November of 2025. I was explaining then how the dollar was looking for a secondary peak in the early part of 2025 and then would trade down through most of the year, particularly against gold. And so it has all been saying this for over a year now and constantly focusing on and pinpointing the current time frame, late October, early November. We've just come through mid-month, so we are in the second half of October. And that is fulfilling a myriad of daily, weekly, monthly, and even multi-year cycles in gold. So it's all going according to plan. And even back then, I explained and have explained throughout this year why, if we were going to see that conclusion, that outlook reinforced, that gold should set a intervening high in late April, early May, and that was the midpoint between the October 2024 and late October 2025 cycles, and often you'll get a corroborating peak at the midpoint of a cycle like that, and that is exactly when gold peaked on April 22nd. And then from that point forward, the outlook was to see another intervening high in late July, right around the 22nd, 23rd, because that would then split down this same cycle into its midpoint. It's also a very geometric cycle that, when you divvy up a year into its quarters, into its 90-degree sections, you'll see that gold adheres to that very closely. And sure enough, gold peaked on July 22nd, 23rd, just an intermediate peak. But that reinforced the outlook for a bigger surge into late October, early November. And also in sync with what I call my 90-10 rule of cycles, everything was saying that the final weeks and months of that surge into late October 2025 should be the accelerated portion of the bull market in gold and silver. And so that's what you're seeing, kind of this parabola type of move to the upside. And from a cyclic perspective, we're getting very close to the time when a very significant peak should take hold. There's some price indicators already pinpointing some levels to watch. And so, yes, now that we've hit the midpoint of October, we're now entering this time from right now, October 15th, 16th, into October 22nd, and then secondarily out into the end of the month, when a significant peak is a far greater likelihood from a cyclic perspective.
Silver is now at new all-time highs. Are your cycles showing when to expect the final top in silver?
Very similar in silver. Now, that term final, I wouldn't necessarily assign that term unless I know exactly what time frame you're talking about. I do think we're going to see a multi-month peak set in silver in the next week or so. I've got weekly and daily cycles that were telling me to look most significantly or have the most acute focus on beginning right now, October 15th, 16th, and into the 22nd, 23rd. So we are just entering that time frame and coming up on some key objectives in silver as well. And all of this just corroborates the series of articles I put out in early April that were explaining why silver and the white metals, platinum and palladium, should see major accelerated advances beginning in the second week of April. That's what not even just cycles, but some very key timing indicators that I use, technical indicators that have both a time and price factor to them. And they were all saying to look for silver, platinum, palladium to set intervening lows during the second week of April and then begin just major surges in all those metals. I was describing it back then in early April as the golden opportunity, a little bit of a pun there, but that all of these markets were poised to see major breakout moves to the upside. And that's what we're nearing the fulfillment of, at least on a 3 to 6 month and 6 to 12 month basis.
The bond market is rallying. What do you see ahead for bonds and interest rates?
I am still looking at the first quarter of 2026 as being a significant synergy of monthly cycles, even some longer-term weekly cycles that are all coming into play during a specific time in the first quarter of 2026. I've elaborated on that in my monthly Inside Track newsletter. But I think that bonds are going to work higher into that time frame. Doesn't mean it's going to be a straight shot up, but that is when I expect to see a fairly significant top in bonds, so a corresponding bottom in interest rates.
U.S. stock markets had a significant down day on Friday, October 10th. Where are your cycles pointing for the stock markets from here?
Well, it's not just cycles, but it's a lot of key indicators that were telling me to look for two declines during the month of October. The first one in a lot of the indexes was expected to start in late September and then culminate with a quick sharp drop into October 10th. And then the second one was forecast to take hold in the second half of October. And so we certainly saw that first part. The indexes kind of give a quick plunge right into that October 10th date. They've now rebounded into midweek, mid-month. Here, October 15th, 16th is when my work is saying you've got a good chance of stocks turning back down. And then as we near the end of the month, things should get progressively more vulnerable for stocks. So I am looking for another downdraft here after mid-month.
The price of crude has been pulling back as we head towards winter. Where is crude oil in its cycle?
I have been saying that I thought that we would see a bottom in crude in January of 2026. And even when we were talking last month, I explained why I thought September 26th or 29th, a Friday and a Monday, would be the peak in the rebound in energy markets and then usher in a new wave down in crude. And all of the energy complex, as well as most of your oil and gas stocks, all peaked right there on the 26th, turned down on the 29th. We've been heading lower ever since. And I do think on balance, you're going to see crude move lower into the end of the year and early part of next year. But that's likely to be a volatile move with contrasting declines and rebounds, but crude is narrowing its downside price objectives, and that's something I've started to expound on more in my weekly relay publications, but it is all just reinforcing that I think overall crude will move lower into January of next year.
Last year, natural gas bottomed in late October, then ran higher into March. Can we see a repeat of that this year?
That is a possibility because from a wave and price structure, natural gas has set is in the process of setting a secondary low. And from a wave perspective, it looks like it should see a new rally in the fourth quarter and likely stretch into March or April of next year. So there is a good chance from some non-correlated cycles and indicators that we could see a similar seasonal pattern, although natural gas tends to have two different types of seasons. Sometimes it's having its big moves based on extreme cold, sometimes based on extreme heat. But it does look like we could see a scenario a bit like what we saw this past year.
Does the U.S. dollar look like it put in a double bottom in July and September?
I think it definitely did on a 2 to 3 month basis, maybe even a 3 to 6 month basis. But on a longer term basis, my work is still saying to expect lower levels in the dollar. Right now, it has not yet made it to its rebound price objective. So I do think we've got a decent chance for some more upside in coming weeks.
The Canadian dollar has been pulling back. Where's the Canadian dollar in its cycle?
Canadian dollar is a little bit of a mix between some of these other currencies and the energy markets, but it has been trending lower for a few months here. And I could see it still being under pressure in the coming weeks. And like I said, some of that is probably a bit related to energy outlook, but obviously its own fundamentals. But I haven't seen anything to indicate a near-term bottom taking hold, and really wouldn't see something like that until the December Canadian dollar futures, which is what I focus a bit more on, until that closes above 72, I don't see signs of anything more than a few-day bottom.
Bitcoin hit $126,000 this month. Are we likely to see a final top in Bitcoin anytime soon?
Well, I have been saying all along that I thought Bitcoin had its really key upside objectives between 122,000 and 127,000. And like you said, we just went back up and retested that level. And I think that that's going to continue to hold, even though it's had a few tests. And my work has been saying that we should see a few months of volatile consolidation, with 100,000 being the first floor. But if and when that is broken, there are some secondary targets that have a bit more synergy to them that Bitcoin could break to in the coming weeks or coming months, actually. So I do think that it is in the process of setting a top. There was a bit of divergence between it and Ether at this latest high, and even some on the daily price charts, some important signals right around the 112, 113, 113,000 level in Bitcoin, that it's reinforcing the top and showing that there's more of a breakdown unfolding here. So if we can get down below and close below 110,000, that would be the first sign. But more important is breaking below and closing below 107,000 would be a strong indication of a multi-month top forming.
Looks like both platinum and palladium did a cup and handle pattern in the charts, then moved significantly higher. What are your cycles saying for platinum and palladium?
Well, the cycles are very similar to gold and silver. And like I said, that was showing strong upside movement from early April, first into late July, and then into late October. So that's still my outlook for most of the metals.
How are the cycles looking in agriculture?
Well, they're fairly mixed, but from a price perspective, as opposed to, it's kind of hard to lump the entire agricultural arena into one cycle. But in livestock, you've had signals that hogs had already peaked and were heading lower. Meanwhile, cattle is moving upwards towards some key upside targets that could be seen in the very near future. And the grain markets have been going through a bottoming phase that I think we're going to see some decent bull markets probably starting in November of this year and stretching into some key cycles that are converging out in 2026. So it's a little bit of a mix, and there certainly is price action is more what I'm watching now that they are in that time frame, that cyclic time frame for a bottoming phase. And so there's some key price levels and key indicators that are poised to turn up but have not yet done so.
Are there any other cycles we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
probably the only other one, a much broader one, that you and I have talked about for probably a decade, and that is the cycle of war that, like I said, it's a very long-term cycle. It's an 80-year cycle that I documented back to the 1200s and has had a strong impact on America and the Western world, particularly over the last few hundred years. But for a decade, I kept saying that all that was focused on late 2021 through late 2025 to see the next real flare-up in war cycles. And late 2021 was when Russia started mounting troops on Ukraine's border. And early 2022 was when things really kicked in. So from a timing and cyclic perspective, that has been right on track. And so has the related Middle East cycles that I explained in numerous reports back in 2021, 2022, 2023, why you would see a strong surge in Middle East war cycles from late 2023 into late 2025, even pinpointing the month of October in both of those time frames, 2023 and 2025. So that is certainly reaching fruition. And the broader war cycles were and are also expected to culminate here in the fourth quarter of 2025. But those culminations can often be some of the most precarious time frames. So watching for any extremes and signs of a peak, so to speak, in that war cycle.
Eric, where can people subscribe to Inside Track with Two Eyes?
They can subscribe and get a lot of information and dozens or even hundreds of previous publications and reports at our main website, InsideTrackTrading.com. That's INSIIDE, TrackTrading.com.
Eric, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thank you for having me back, Jim.
My guest has been Eric Haddock, CEO and President of InsideTrackTrading.com. Coming up, Robert Campbell, next on This Week in Money.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Robert Campbell, publisher of the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter, his website realestatetiming.com. He's speaking to us from San Diego. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
When will the next issue of the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter be published, and where can our listeners subscribe?
The next issue will be published, November 15th, the middle of next month. I publish once every 2 months. And you could go to realestatetiming.com to learn about it.
Based on your book, Timing the Real Estate Market, are we in a real estate downturn?
No, not yet. Close, but not yet. Like here in the United States, about 60% of all major cities, metropolitan areas, are still going up in value, slightly, I mean, not by much, and 40%, they're declining slightly. You know, we've had some major declines in some cities like that really boomed, like, especially in Florida, Austin, Texas, I think prices are down, 10, 15, 20% so far, and we're just getting into it. But in general, net-net, most cities in the United States are still appreciating at about 1 or 2% a year.
Do you see a downturn coming?
Absolutely. This real estate bubble is bigger than the last real estate bubble. So I expect if you just look back in history and look at the cycles going back 50 years, there's a pattern that is repeated, without fail, for 50 straight years. So I don't expect it to be any different this time.
Gold continues to hit new all-time highs, well above $4,000 an ounce. Do you think gold's momentum can continue even higher?
Yep, way higher. In fact, in my last issue of my timing letter, I showed people why. I wrote an article about U.S. houses versus gold. Where should your money be? And based on the relationship, the ratio between the value of a U.S. average value of U.S. home and the price of gold, that changes over time. But if you look at that, if you look at those cycles and where we are now, we're currently in a cycle that favors gold, and that's been the case for the last, I think almost since 2022, 2023, and since that ratio changed and started favoring gold, I think gold has appreciated 100%, and the value of a U.S. home has appreciated 10%. So your money should be in gold right now compared to real estate.
Does a rising gold price justify higher home prices?
No, it doesn't. In fact, because of that ratio, you would expect, let's say gold can go up 100% and the price of homes could go up 50%, meaning your money is still being treated better in real estate. But typically, where the ratios, start working in gold's favor is when housing prices decline. For example, back in the last bubble that peaked in 2006, I'm just using memory right now, and these numbers could be off. Let's say it took 50 ounces of gold, or let's say it took 200 ounces of gold to buy the average price U.S. home at the peak. At the bottom, it took 100 ounces of gold. 100. So that's what the ratio measures. So the way I see it this time, I see, whereas it takes something like, I don't know what the number is, let's say 60 ounces of gold at today's price to buy the average price home, at the bottom, it's going to take 20 to 25. So that's the fun in understanding the cycles, That's how you get ahead in life. I mean, is there any guarantees that's going to happen? Nope. Price of gold, price of housing, everything can crash tomorrow. But, based on history, based on ratios, and using your brain, that's a good bet to take.
The Fed says they're going to slow the bond buying program. What is this likely to do to the Fed rate and mortgage rates?
Well, when the Fed stops using quantitative easing, QE, to buy mortgages, mortgage rates go up. Because when the Fed's buying that shows demand. There's high demand, and when there's high demand, the price of the mortgage bonds go up, and mortgage rates go down. I think I got that right. But anyway, no, it means that when the Fed exercises QE, that's to lower mortgage rates. Lower interest, and it's not only 30-year mortgage rates; it's 20 and 30-year U.S. Treasury bonds, which I'm sure they'd like to lower that as well, the rate on those as well, because currently it's costing over $1 trillion a year to service the $37 trillion of debt that we've accumulated here in the U.S. And that's a big number; it's bigger than defense spending.
President Trump and ICE have supposedly removed 500,000 illegals and another 1.6 million have left the U.S. on their own. Could large numbers of illegals leaving the U.S. affect the housing markets?
Well, it has to. I mean, to some degree. I mean, if you know, what do we have in the United States? 10 million, 20 million, whatever million people that are here illegally, they're not all living on the street. They're living in houses somewhere. I don't care if they, you know, two or three families are living in a house. But if all of a sudden those people start going home, those houses are going to be vacant, and because of supply and demand, they're going to have to lower the rents to attract new renters.
What's the latest on real estate across the U.S.?
Like I said previously, nationally, U.S. housing prices are still going up, you know, about 1% to 2% a year.
And California real estate?
It's still going up, too. Still going up, too. And even though we have the most high-priced housing prices in the United States, you know, maybe Hawaii does, but we're running, you know, we run neck and neck on that. But California, because there's still a shortage of supplies of homes on the market, that housing prices are still going up. And that's in spite of the fact that housing affordability is near record lows, which has always been a historical signal. That any time housing affordability gets, you know, below 17% in California, housing prices have gone down and sometimes significantly down without fail. So this time it's a little different only because of supply. There's still no supply on the market.
That'll change. Mm-hmm. In California, when the housing market turns into a bear market, do the selling prices of high-end homes start to drop first?
No, actually they don't. It's just the opposite. Mm. A lot of people say that, but the data doesn't support that saying. What drops first is the price of low-priced homes. Low price. Because during the upcycle, what goes up the most, if you compare the price of low-priced houses versus high-priced houses, low-priced houses not only start going up first, but they go up more on a percentage basis than high-priced houses. And on the downside, the same thing happens. They're the first to correct, and they go down more than high-priced houses. So most people don't believe that, but the data confirms that.
At what point in a real estate downturn is it a good time to put in a low-ball offer?
When prices are depressed, when sales are extremely low, when nobody's building homes, the builders aren't building homes because nobody's buying them, that's the time to buy a home. And if you use the to pat myself on the back, I'm pretty good at identifying those times because there's certain key indicators that I identified in my book that enable you to do that. So you're not just flying blind the whole time. You can use data to get ahead in this world. That's a fact. And so with real estate, as far as when to buy and when to sell real estate, that, you know, people should use that data.
Are physical well-being and mental well-being both important as we age?
Absolutely. I mean, I tell people this. I like making money as much as the next guy, and probably a little more. The first thing I do when I get up in the morning, I ask myself, what am I going to do to make more money? I ask myself, what am I going to do to take care of my physical health? Am I going to go to the gym today? Am I going to go run at the beach today? Am I going to go take the Beagles for a 6-mile walk in the canyons? This is very, very works your body. But I do. That's the first thing I ask, and it's without fail, I do one of those things. It's health first, money second.
if you're buying a house, what's the first things you should look for?
Well, it depends what kind of buyer you are. Mm-hmm. My background and my life have been focused and used in real estate development. My dad was a builder, developer for over 50 years, and I was a builder, developer for 10 years. I don't do it anymore because it cuts into my gym time, but that's the best way to make value, to create value, I mean, to make money in real estate, is to look for a house, hopefully at a very, very depressed price, that you can add value to and ride the cycle up. The most money I have ever made in real estate, which was a $600,000 profit, I made it in 1992, which was I bought a home for $500,000 before I was knew about real estate. Tammy, I bought a home for $500,000. It was in 1990. I spent a year of my labor and $100,000 of my cash to make that home the most beautiful and amazing home you'll ever see. And somebody, a very rich person, bought it for $1.2 million 2 years later. And that was in a bad market. So creating value, guys, creating beauty is a very, very excellent way to make money in real estate. Now, if you can combine that with real estate timing, like buying an expensive home that needs a lot of work on it at the bottom of the cycle, doing the work and then riding the cycle up, you'll make more money doing that than anything you'll ever make in your life.
Now, when you say beautify the place, is that the landscaping or is it the interior? Or should you just leave the interior alone and leave that up to the new buyers?
Oh, that's a great question, Jim. A really good question. And here's the answer. When you fix up a house and put a lot of money and time into it. Now, let me qualify that, guys. You can't do that to a cookie-cutter house in a subdivision of 200 or 300 where every other house looks alike. It doesn't work that way. Because nobody's going to pay 20% over market for one of those houses. They're just not going to. You need to use a higher-end house where, that you know, wealthier people buy because they will buy the beauty. But to answer your question, when you fix up a house, every square foot of, it should be your objective to turn every area of that house, inside and out, especially the landscaping, to be very, very special. All of a sudden, I mean, landscaping is, here's something else most people don't understand. Landscaping is extremely important in selling a house. I mean, that's the first people see when they walk up. They walk by a house and they go, wow. I mean, and you have to use, you know, it takes a lot of skill and good design to create that you know, that vibe for people coming in. But you can't have that and people go, wow, I got to see the inside of that house. And you walk in and all it is drywall that's been painted. No, that ain't going to do it. You got to do the whole thing. So it's really, it does take effort. The result that's achieved by that effort is worth the effort by a mile.
Does a nice white flagpole increase the value?
No. I don't think so. Well, I've never used it. All of a sudden, you draw people in with the landscaping. Beautiful landscaping. I mean, beautiful. And all of a sudden, then they walk through and get into the front door. They know they're at a special place. And then they open the front door, and they look in, and they go, wow, this place is cool. That's how you sell a house for a lot of money, and you make a big profit. Because beauty sells. Because people like beautiful things. Men like beautiful women. Women like beautiful men. Everybody likes a beautiful car. Everybody likes a beautiful house. Everybody likes beautiful jewelry. It sells. But you take the time to create that, and I'll tell you, you've got, that's a winning formula. Because with houses, and I learned this a long time ago, it's a woman that buys the house, not the man. So when I sold that home for a $600,000 profit, here's what happens. All of a sudden, the husband and wife will come and look at the house, and the wife will go, wow, I want to buy this house. And the husband will go, no, I don't think so. This house is, 10 or 15 or 20% over the market. Over the market, I'm not paying that much. And the wife goes, okay, then look, here's what I agree to do. I want to buy this same house somewhere else, and I want to do what Mr. Campbell did to it. And the guy looks at her and says, okay, we'll buy this house. Because they've got the money. All of them have the money. All of them have the money. And, I mean, sometimes, and usually, that if you create that kind of thing, people with money, I mean, they're not going to waste their money on time. But all of a sudden, if it only costs an extra, $200,000 or $300,000, to buy a house that's all tricked out compared to something else, if that's going to make them happy, they've got that money, and they're going to spend it. You know, it's not like they need a mortgage payment, a bigger mortgage to cover it. They got the money, and the wife will make the husband buy it. That's been my experience, and it's the best way to make money in houses. You create value.
When people are looking at your house, is it a good idea to have freshly baked cookies in the oven or on the table? Does that smell help sell?
Yeah, that probably helps 1%.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't hurt having that smell in the house. Of course it doesn't help. But what's more important is the design of the interior of the house. That what's been put on the walls, the woodwork, having open beam ceilings with wood ceilings, and that the key, and I know this is a lot of work, guys, but I got to share with you, what's been my experience. The key is to make every single area of that house a special place. Because when you start tricking out a house, you just can't trick out the kitchen or one of the bathrooms, and then say, okay, we can't afford anything, and leave the rest of it. Because you walk from the kitchen or one of the bathrooms, and you go into a very plain room that's painted drywall with nothing else, and they go, what happened here? So you got to do the whole thing, and you got to commit to doing the whole thing, and that's how you make the biggest profits in real estate. My dad built homes in Rancho Santa Fe for 50 years. Rancho Santa Fe is a very, very wealthy area, so I learned early in my life, what rich people, what a beautiful home looks like, and what rich people like, and that kind of spurred my desire to do the same. It's not with $10 million houses, but you can certainly do it with a $1 or $2 million house. And by the way, when I say $1 or $2 million house, that the median price home in California, everybody, is $1 million. So that's not a high-priced home in California anymore.
Bob, where can our listeners buy your book, Timing the Real Estate Market, and subscribe to your newsletter?
They can go to realestatetiming.com. realestatetiming.com. And I have a do a blog post about once every 2 weeks that some people might find real interesting. And if you want just to be notified when a blog post comes up, you can sign up and I'll send that to you. You can read those. But I talk about real estate. I talk about health. I talk about the things I've personally done to my home to increase the value. And you increase the value a lot. I just redid my kitchen in my house for $8,000, and I increased the value by 50. Is that a good investment? Yeah, it's a really good investment. So, I mean, I don't do this for sale anymore. I do it for my own, personal satisfaction, because I like to make things beautiful. But if I ever needed to sell this house, it would sell for a lot of money, a lot more money than the houses in the area. I guarantee that. And plus, it's fun living in a house that's beautiful, and it's fun doing what it takes to make a house beautiful.
Bob, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Robert Campbell. He was speaking to us from San Diego. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Eric Haddock, and Robert Campbell. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.